Well, here's our next passenger. So welcome aboard, Florian Holfelder. Do step into our punt. Come and have a seat. Florian's a fellow of Trinity Hall College and also from the Department of Biochemistry. You work on enzymes.
Yes, enzymes make reactions fast, and they're the ultimate green reagents. So some food additives have enzymes, washing powder consists of enzymes. And when you look at the chemistry, these chemistries are very, very complicated and difficult to do in the lab. But enzymes do it with rate accelerations that are large, and the numbers are so large that they hardly mean anything. The accelerations there are 10 to the 21, for example. That's a 1 with 21 zeros behind it.
That's how fast it makes a reaction go compared with if you didn't have the enzyme there.
That's right, yeah. So if you look in the water, the reaction would be not occurring at all, even after millions of years. But when you put a bit of the washing powder in, then suddenly proteins get degraded very, very quickly. And that's an amazing chemical machine, and actually so amazing that we understand only a very small fraction of it, and we want to get further into the unknown.
So what you're basically saying is we want to be able to capture and use these molecules in the laboratory and also in industry to do things in a much cleaner, faster way. It's more energetically favourable, and you're out there looking to find out, A, how these chemical reactions occur using enzymes in the first place, and how we can find better ones.
That's right, yeah. And the technical trick here is to be so good at, first of all, making a mess, and then being very accurate in finding one molecule out of billions of molecules that are useless.
So do you mean, in other words, you're making different versions of an enzyme? When you say make a mess, you just make lots of different forms of it, and then you find the one which works best and then ask why?
Exactly. We do it exactly like nature would do it. Nature is imperfect in replicating the genetic blueprint, the DNA. And we do that in the laboratory. We use a reaction to multiply DNA molecules that makes imperfect copies. And we hope that they go in the right direction and that the difference makes a difference.
Oh, I see. So you make a difference or an error in the DNA, which changes the protein, the enzyme, very, very subtly. And then you ask, has that difference translated into an enzyme that works better or worse?
This is exactly what we do, yeah.
So what sorts of reactions are you looking at?
We're looking at hydrolytic reactions, reactions where water is a reagent because they're useful. They're useful in washing powders, in detoxification of pesticides and so on. And we have enzymes that are interesting because they do several things. They're generalists. They don't only do one thing very well, but they do several things very well. And in evolution, this might have been extremely useful because often you find in nature that genes get duplicated, and the best way of getting the new activity as soon as possible would be if the original enzyme had a small side activity. We call that catalytic promiscuity. If one enzyme doesn't only have one partner, but several partners with whom it can engage. And often these are different chemistries that it can do. And that's why these promiscuous enzymes are, for us, the starting point for evolution. You're more likely to recover one clone with a new activity if it already had a little bit of it originally.
What sorts of things, apart from washing powders, are you looking at then?
So, for example, we're looking at phosphatases, and some of the pesticides that have been put in nature in the 50s are very slowly degraded. And so having hydrolases that break them down completely in a biocompatible way are useful for opening up brownfield sites again to nature.
Have you got any enzymes that you've identified that do that job well now then?
Yes, we found some enzymes that can be changed from one activity that is more or less useless to a more useful activity. Well, we're not quite at an industrial application, but we can show we can at least, because the tricks we've developed in the technology were very important. And what we've learned in the process of that is that, in principle, you want to start off with a jack of all trades that can do everything just not very well, but it can do everything just a bit. And then you enhance that background activity to get better. If you start with something that is promiscuous, it interacts with everything, you have a much better chance to find a good clone, a good enzyme.
When you say you make a mess and then find out how it works later, do you actually ever work the other way and then say, right, we've now got a really good enzyme that's improved dramatically, now let's go and have a look at it and try and find out why?
Yeah, so we then crystallize it, we wait for it to form well-defined materials, crystals, that you can diffract. And these are techniques that were developed in Cambridge in the 50s. And now it's fairly standard that even an amateur like me can, together with a good collaborator, can start making crystals. And that then gives us insight in the inner workings of the enzyme. So we can pinpoint why we found it in the library in the first place. And that hopefully helps us to define a whole class of enzymes that are versatile. So in case you wanted an enzyme for a specific application, we now know where to start.
I was going to say, because presumably the end point for this will be you'll understand so much about it that you can just say, either take one off the shelf that you've made earlier, or you'll know exactly how to tweak something to add an activity, that a certain chemical reaction or a certain ability to do something very well, to an enzyme that already exists.
Yes, that's right. And another thing that I think we haven't cracked quite yet is how nature can do it so efficiently, because very often we find that protein structures are very delicate. They are a bit like a bundle of wool, but unlike the bundle of wool, if it's not quite in the right orientation, it'll just collapse and become non-functional. And one thing that you have to do when you mutate, when you make a mess of the enzymes a bit, is that you don't delete the activity, that the proteins become what is appearing when you put milk into your cappuccino, the froth on top. That's actually denatured enzyme, but it's not functional anymore. Now, we want to avoid that, and there are some tricks that we don't quite understand that you can affect on the structure of enzymes so that you avoid loss in your library. Some clones just denature, they disappear, and they're not selectable anymore. And there are some tricks now that you keep the structure quite constant, that you start with something that is resistant to temperature, and that has then enough degrees of freedom to find the new function.
Do you think you might be able to invent an enzyme to stop punts sinking? Because I think we might be taking on water here.
I could probably make an enzyme that helps us to hydrolyze compounds that are toxic in the chem at some stage, or maybe an enzyme that helps us to
bail out?
maybe.
Thank you very much. Great to have you aboard.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mind your step. Don't fall in. Well, thank you very much to Florian Holfelder. He's from the Department of Biochemistry, and he's also a fellow of Trinity Hall College, and his work is looking at how you can make enzymes better so that we can get stains out of dirty shirts.
Sorting out the sparks from the quarks, the Naked Scientists.